This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
A Pint of Science 2019, recorded on location in Brew Union, Palmerston North, with MPR. Wednesday the 22nd of May. So what do? Genomics. The Q&A session with presenters Rob Elshire on genomics, Simon Hills on the Kiwi Whakapapa, genomics and conservation, and Lisa Warbrick with the genomics, taonga and commercialisation perspective.
So I think we've got some time for questions. Maurice, is that... Would you say that we've got between 5 and 10 minutes where we can take some questions? So now is the time, actually, when we can open up questions to all three of our speakers, if anyone has any questions for them. Oh, we've got a question here. Now, see how I'm holding the microphone? It's touching my chin. Can you do that? To your chin, not to my chin. Yeah, okay. Here you go.
Yep. So I was just wondering, with the kiwi, how they are more closely related to the elephant bird. I was wondering, have you any idea how a bird got all the way from Madagascar around to New Zealand?
That's a really great question. So in thinking about the evolution of those birds, you also have to think about the evolution of the landscape through time. So at the time of the ancestor of the elephant bird and the kiwi, the landscape was such that Antarctica, Australia, New Zealand, and Africa were very closely connected. So at that time, it's likely that the ancestor, the common ancestor to both those birds, existed either across that landscape or migrated across that landscape. So it wasn't that one bird travelled from, or one group of birds travelled from Madagascar to New Zealand or the other way. What you had was a group of birds that probably flew, but a connected population. And over time, the landscape disconnected. Those birds could fly, so they could migrate between those different land masses. But eventually, when Madagascar got far sufficiently separated from Africa and New Zealand sufficiently separated from Australia, the distance of flying between those places was so great that those populations then couldn't connect anymore. And then what happens is, once those populations become disconnected, they can evolve in different directions. So you had a flying ancestor in both those places that got separated and then diverged. One evolved into kiwi, one evolved into the giant elephant bird in Madagascar. Yeah?
Thank you for that excellent question, and thank you for that very accessible answer, Simon. I learned a lot, too. Who else has a question for one of our scientists tonight? Oh, excellent.
Okay. I actually just have a quick one about the kiwi. So to get the genomes of the kiwi, which part, what sample did you take from the kiwi to be able to map the genome?
So that's what sample would we need to do the genome? In theory, any tissue sample that contains DNA. In practice, what's mostly used is either blood samples. So kiwi red blood cells have DNA in them, unlike our blood cells, which have no... Our red blood cells have no DNA. So bird blood is a very good source for really good quality DNA. If you were sampling from, say, a dead animal, a lot of people would take a liver sample. It's got something like liver is tissue that regenerates rapidly, so it's got really good quality new young cell tissue with really good quality DNA. So basically, yeah, live bird, somebody might take a blood sample. You could take a feather sample with that little bit of DNA. The trouble with that is that the quantity is not very much. So you need, often you need a good quantity of DNA to get a good complete genome. The other concern is degradation of the DNA. So you want a really fresh sample. With an old sample, the DNA degradation won't be such that you don't get a complete genome. You'd get most of it, but not necessarily complete.
Thank you again. Any other questions for our scholars?
Hello. Yeah, this is for Simon as well. Simon, sorry. I just wonder if there's any other species apart from kiwi that you think may be overlooked in genomics research, and that kiwi are being focused on because they're, you know, kiwi icons.
That's a really interesting question. As a guy who studies mollusks, anything that comes in a shell is being overlooked. No, but it's. I think where we're at with genomics at the minute, is it's getting a lot cheaper, but it's still relatively expensive. So it's a good idea to focus on. Well, I think it's a good idea to focus on some of those species that are really iconic, so that you get that that publicity about it, basically. So people really get to understand how it works in something that's really iconic. From a conservation perspective, kiwi are having some real issues. I think it's something like 2% loss of kiwi per year. So there are, from a conservation perspective, some really important reasons to do that. That said, things like kakapo. So there is the Kakapo Genome Project going on, where they're trying to sequence the genome of every individual kakapo. In terms of thinking about the kind of analysis you can do on a data set, that's incredible. That's really cool. But you could list a really long list of really important iconic species. Well, not necessarily iconic species when you start thinking about. I like invertebrates. So there's a huge amount of diversity in New Zealand that comes without a backbone that we don't really pay enough attention to because we've got iconic birds. Now, I don't want to take anything away from the iconic birds. They're really important. But there's a huge amount of biodiversity that we really should be more concerned about. But it's a case of there's only so much dollar to go around for doing this, particularly in the conservation space. So we have to focus on where to start with. I think where the New Zealand psyche is going at the moment, probably going into a better place. There's much more, I guess, pride, much more attention coming on to our biodiversity. I think we'll get to a place where actually to think about the conservation of a species is to think about the genome, the genetics of that species on landscape. So I'd like to think we will get there before it all goes away.
Thank you for that. Does anyone have a question for someone other than Simon? Your question is for Simon? Oh, no, it's not. Okay. Not that Simon isn't lovely, but, you know.
Thank you. My question is for our first speaker. I was just wondering about surprise. So a lot of your work is about certainty, unravelling mysteries, getting to the result you want faster. I just wondered how much surprise plays, and unexpected plays, in your research as well.
It's the best part. So there's, I mean, surprise or serendipity or, you know, like... So my research now is different than it used to be. So my wife Robin and I have a small company here in the Manawatu doing genotyping by sequencing. Mostly we don't drive our own research. It's what people bring to us, you know. And actually, thank you. I didn't prompt you, but I've got a list of things because I can never remember. So we've worked on corn, and Robin and I met at a maize genetics conference quite a few years ago. There's a special place in our heart for that, but we've done rice, and this is a limited list: peas, ryegrass, cherries, olives, almonds, onions, cacao. You know, it's a big thing. Things to make chocolate, sesame, caraway. In New Zealand, we've done kaki, shore plover, some endangered bird species. We're going to do some work with the Kiwi Whakapapa Project, which is amazing. Pawa in the next year, kekawai, which is freshwater crayfish, We've currently got a project on this mammal called a rock hyrax, which we'd never heard of before. It's coming out of Israel. Lizards, bees, bamboo, lentils, on and on and on. And I did, you know, I didn't start as a geneticist. I started actually as a computer electrical engineer and got into biology a little bit later in life. But when I got into biology, I got into it as a general biologist. And it's fun to kind of get back to that, this different things, and see the things that people do. You know, so we've talked about, I think my mate has buggered off, that's all right. Wilson did a lot of farming. I've done a lot of work in farming, agriculture-related stuff. But to see the things that people are doing with the technology that I co-developed is amazing. To be able to measure baseline genetics with an eye towards measuring climate change. Never would have thought about it, right? I mean, when I developed my work, I was looking at maize, sitting at the bench, doing molecular biology, which I didn't ever want to do, in row crops, which I never wanted to work in, you know? And to see what people are, it's amazing. And what we're doing now, surprise, that was the question. What we're doing now in genomics, and what we're doing with this Genomics for Aotearoa New Zealand Society, it's not just science. It's you know, GFANS is where society and genomics science meet. That is cool.
You were talking earlier about the golden kiwi fruits. I was wondering, have you ever looked into a cure for kauri dieback?
So kauri dieback, that's a... it's a simple question on the surface, but it's a complex question underneath. And I have been keen to look into kauri dieback. From when I got here, my good mate Phil Wilcox, who's at Otago, took me to a kauri dieback symposium in Auckland. That was in 2013. And as a person with a background in plant breeding, he thought, well, right, if we could find seedlings that were resistant and then do genomics work, we could maybe understand or maybe find some genomics regions that were resistant to the disease, just like in the gold kiwi fruit, eh? And build a breeding program, maybe it wouldn't be something that would keep the ones that are alive now alive, but maybe make sure there are kauri forests in Aotearoa for future generations. And there still hasn't been funding to do that work, but there's also other things that have come around since then that make the picture more complicated. Lisa talked about the microbiome, and I referenced the things that are underneath. It's maybe also, this is actually a part of why we started GFANS. It's this idea of Maori knowledge, Te Ao Maori, and the Western science together that could maybe help us understand how we can save the kauri or how we can develop new varieties of kauri in the future. But maybe it's not the thing that I thought of at first, the surprise again. You know, the thing about science is it's only, from my view, this is just my view, science is the best approximation to the understanding of reality that I have. It doesn't mean that it's reality. It's the best approximation that I have. And it's a way of learning and improving on what that is to better understand, get a better approximation of reality. So for me, I think that there's a bunch of work that we can do in around kauri dieback, but the work has to be done collectively. It has to be done with you know, from my perspective as a Western scientist, I will bring to the table what those things which I can. But the te ao Māori has to be there as well. Because it's not just about the kauri, it's about the things around the kauri. The things that exist in the soil, the other plants, the ecosystem in the forest. All of those things play a role in what we see in kauri dieback. It's much beyond me, my friend. It's a big question and a very good one. Thank you for asking.
All right, everyone, we've got time for one more question.
You've been listening to excerpts from the Pint of Science 2019 series of talks at Brew Union in Palmerston North with NPR. To listen to more of these talks at a time that suits you, head to npr.nz/show/pint2019 for a full podcast list of all the talks held. Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.